couple of brief announcements. The books at the back are for you. They're free. We get them from a Buddhist monastery. They are translations of teachings, basic teachings of Theravadan Buddhism, which is the Buddhism of Southeast Asia, Thailand, Sri Lanka, etc. The CDs are MP3 recordings of a terrific monk, Ajahn Jeff, giving teachings on the foundations of Buddhist practice. So if you take the CDs, dump the files onto your computer, and then bring the CDs back so that other people can enjoy it. But feel free to keep the books. The bowl is just to pay the rent. That's where the money goes. I don't take money for teaching. If you've got a couple of bucks to throw in the basket, it would be very helpful for us to keep Dharma Punks here. If you want to give more, I'd actually encourage you to give instead to Doctors Without Borders, which is a terrific organization that's helping out with the crisis in Haiti. But if you don't have money to give, of course, don't worry about it. And at the end, if you can help put the blankets and the cushions back at the back of the room, that would be very helpful as well. So tonight I'm in the third and final talk on the Four Noble Truths. If you, by the way, enjoy the talks that you hear here, they're all posted on the internet at dharmapunksnyc.podbean.com, so you can listen. And I also put up my notes on a blog spot so that you don't have to take notes unless you want to. And that's dharmapunksnyc.blogspot.com. So there are resources, and on our sites we have resources that link you to other sites of interest and for Buddhist practice. So just to recap quickly of what I talked about, of course I can't go into any depth on the first two noble truths because I'm talking about the fourth, and that's a very large and important subject. But basically the foundation of the Buddha's teachings is something called karma, which is the basic philosophical or psychological outlook that everything that occurs in the mind occurs for a reason. It's cause. Everything we experience has a cause. Things don't happen simply by accident in the mind. We don't experience anger, frustration, joy, stress, and tranquility just by accident. They are the results of previous thoughts and actions. We create the mind that we live in, generally by our previous actions and thoughts. So we've lived a life of being judgmental of others. We shouldn't be surprised if we live in a mind that's very judgmental. If we lived in a mind that's tolerant, then we shouldn't be surprised that we live in a mind that's tolerant for ourselves and patient with ourselves. The actions and thoughts that we have create the mind that we live in. So it's a little bit like, for instance, as I said earlier, if the crime rates go up, it's often because there's unemployment. If unemployment goes down, then the crime rates tend to go down. There's a direct correlation between the cause and the effect. So stress is an effect. Happiness and tranquility is an effect. It's an effect that's a result of skillful or unskillful actions that we take. And the Buddha, like virtually every other major spiritual path that follows and every major psychological and even philosophical path that follows also goes on to say that it's the moral quality of our actions that determine whether we'll be happy or stressed out. If we live in a mind that's thinking thoughts of causing harm or trying to get through craving our happiness from the world around us by lying, stealing, cheating, killing, if we live in a mind that is desperately trying to get its happiness from the outside world, that's called craving. And craving is the foundation for all harmful actions. If we live in that kind of mind, we will live in a mind that's telling itself that it doesn't have enough to be happy. It will always feel that there's something missing. We'll always have this energy of trying to get more and more and more from the world. And when we try to control the world and the people around us, we're making our happiness contingent over something we ultimately have no control over, because we don't have control over other people. We don't have control over what other people think or say to us. We don't have control over the stock market. We don't have control over how much approval we get from other people. The Buddha said that people will often criticize us if we speak just the right amount. We'll get criticized no matter what we do. So if we're looking for our happiness from other people all the time, or from fame, or from monetary gain, or from just passing sensual pleasures like anything from drugs to alcohol to food to loveless sex, we will eventually find that these things no longer have the power to fill us up. Eventually, over time, they will get bored of them, or we won't be able to find the things we need. Our tolerance will develop. We'll need more and more and more food, drugs, sex, and it'll still be this feeling of emptiness within us. So the lasting place of finding happiness is by working with our intentions and our thoughts to redirect them to skillful mind states. Things like gratitude, generosity, and goodwill, which just so happens to be the antidotes to ill will, craving, and harmfulness. If we focus on thoughts like gratitude, generosity, we're not telling the mind, we're not training the mind to believe that it's missing something, that there's something missing from me right now, that I don't have what it takes to be happy. The more we practice generosity and gratitude and goodwill, we're training our minds to come from a place of abundance, from a place of I have enough right here and right now to be happy. My happiness is not externally based. It's based on focusing on practicing skillful thoughts and skillful actions. So the fundamental of the Eightfold Path, which is the fourth noble truth, is seeing this, is understanding karma. It's called samadhi, which is right view. Every single factor in the Eightfold Path starts out with the word sama, S-A-M-M-A, and it's generally translated to mean right. So people say the Eightfold Path is right understanding, right thought, right speech, etc., right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. People translate right, sama as right, but generally what I think it should be translated as, but I'm not going to use it tonight because it'll just confuse you, but it really should mean skillful, practiced, something that we've put some energy and practice into. The Buddha, throughout his teachings, basically drove home the point that the natural, normal, what he called run-of-the-mill way of doing things causes stress, because we train ourselves from childhood onward to look for our happiness outside of ourselves. When we're cold, we look for a blanket. When we're hungry, we look for food. So throughout that process, we continue on when we feel nervous, anxious, uncertain. We look for the answers outside. We try to get more money. We try to get more approval. We try to get more and more from the world. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So this is not a natural practice, the Eightfold Path. It's a practice that comes from putting a lot of effort and repeated endeavor. It's not something that comes naturally. It's something that the mind is not set up to be stress-free. It's actually set up to be very stressed out. The biggest, all of the axons run back to a part of the brain called the amygdala, which is where our fear center is. The fear parts of the brain have the greatest control over the release of cortisol and dopamine of any part of the brain. We are set up not to be happy. We're set up to survive, because the brain was basically locked into place 40,000 years ago when the Earth was a very, 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 very dangerous place. So you're not set up to be happy and tranquil and calm. You are set up to be nervous and worried people. It's just the way the brain thought it was a good idea when there were buffaloes and tigers and other tribes trying to kill you all the time. It thought it was a good idea to keep you worried all the time. So now, when there's very little to, in comparison with what we were dealing with then, to worry about, we still have that anxiousness and that fear. It's just now directed towards the glances that people give us at work, or the fear that we might be rejected if we ask somebody out on a date, or the panic that the possibility of the stock market going down or a job disappearing. We bring the same energy that we would bring years ago to facing imminent death by stampede of a horde of elephants. We bring that energy now to, oh my God, somebody just looked at me sideways. It's because the brain is set up that way. So to train the brain, we have to practice. That's why all of the path starts out with the word sama. It means practiced. It means skillful. It means we put effort into it. So the first part of the path is the wisdom factors, which contain right view and right thought. Right view is simply understanding karma, which we talked about, seeing that the brain or the mind is a causational thing, that our happiness is caused by our skillfulness, and that our unhappiness is caused by our unskillful thoughts and actions. That's it. That's all wisdom boils down to, is understanding that we are the authors of our own happiness and our own suffering. From that, immediately, if you understand that, if you get that, then right thinking, which is the second factor, becomes automatic. The moment you understand that, wow, I am creating my own happiness, it's not something that's happening to me, it's not an accident, that I am giving birth to the mind that I live in by my own thoughts and my actions, the next thing you're going to want to do is think skillful thoughts. You're not going to want to go around thinking stressful thoughts all the time. You won't go around thinking, oh, what's going to happen to me in the future? What do other people think about me? How do I compare with others? How can I get more from other people? You're going to be thinking thoughts like, well, how can I appreciate the skillful things that I've done? How can I feel gratitude for all that I've accomplished? How can I be useful to someone, to give myself a sense of self-esteem? How can I, even if I'm angry with someone, how can I practice sending them goodwill? The reason we want to send goodwill to people that we're angry with is because, quite frankly, goodwill calms the mind and makes you feel better. You're not powerful enough to make someone who's treated you badly somehow rewarded simply by thinking a good thought towards them. You don't have that power. The only thing that happens when you forgive is you feel better. Nothing else happens to that person. Maybe if this was a comic book and you had superpowers, maybe, or if you were God, you could somehow make their life better, and you could feel bad about that. Oh, shit, that person acted unskillfully, said something mean, I thought I forgave them, and now look, they're even in a better realm. That's fucked up. But guess what? That doesn't happen. The only thing that happens when you think thoughts of goodwill is you feel better. There's nothing that fills up the mind with agitation and stories and just endless thoughts as resentment. So these are the kinds of thoughts the Buddha said we should focus on. We should focus on thoughts of letting go of our searching for happiness outside of ourselves in things that are very temporary. We should let go of our resentments and our ill will and focus instead on gratitude, generosity, and goodwill. Now, once we have these two wisdom parts in place, everything from the Eightfold Path immediately flows out from them. It flows in two directions: how we relate to everybody else in the world and how we relate to ourselves on the inside. How we relate to everybody else in the inside world is the part of the path called sila, or virtue. It's got three factors, and those three factors are simply right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Right speech: if we are thinking thoughts of skillfulness, of being generous and grateful, and thoughts of goodwill, we're going to want to not sabotage all that hard work by going out in the world and speaking harmfully or lying. It's just that simple. We can't practice relieving ourselves of stress with our thoughts if the moment we speak with somebody else, we're sabotaging and abandoning all of our hard work by suddenly telling a lie, getting over, exaggerating, whatever. Not only that, but when we lie, when we exaggerate, when we tell untruths, we're again telling the mind that it doesn't have enough to be happy, that it has to lie, that it has to exaggerate, that it has to create a truth to be happy. But on the other hand, when we insist on being harmless, honest, and compassionate with our speech, we are telling the mind that it doesn't have to go overboard and exaggerate and lie to be safe and happy. That we actually are safe and happy, as we can be safe and happy without resorting to those measures. And that kind of mind is much more peaceful. A mind that doesn't have to lie and keep track of all the stories it tells or the exaggerations believes that it is okay, that it can relax, that it doesn't have to protect itself all the time. The energy in lying is, as you well know, is just a terrible thing to maintain and to live with. Right action is simply refraining from, and it again flows right out from right thought. Right action is simply refraining from killing, stealing, and causing harm through sex and intoxication. It's basically refusing to harm. That's basically what it boils down to. Letting go of that desire to try to get our happiness at the expense of others. Because guess what? If we do try to get our happiness at the expense or from others, they won't be happy with that. And we know that. And even if they don't get back at us, we live in a mind that believes the only way it can be happy is by taking from others, by acting unskillfully. On the other hand, a mind that sees that it can survive and be happy without needing to take advantage of anyone else is a very comfortable, peaceful mind. So again, all of this is not to appease any god, because there is no god in Buddhism. The Buddha is dead. He's gone. He's not watching over you. It's not like Santa Claus. There's nobody watching over you. The reason we do this is so that we don't suffer and so that the people we love don't suffer. It's not to appease some god in the sky. This is a path to end our own stress and suffering. And the way we do that is by acting on thoughts and actions that create peace and calm and tranquility. Now, when people hear this, the biggest objection I've heard sometimes is, well, if you're always trying to be skillful in your speech, then you can't be funny, which is utterly absurd. Buddhist monks that I've hung out with are some of the funniest fuckers I've ever hung out with. Ajahn Amaro is hysterical. Ajahn Brahm gives these talks on YouTube, which are just laugh out loud funny. Ajahn Jeff can like make me laugh, like, you know, even though he can be much more serious. All the monks, just by talking about the ways we act unskillfully, talking about the ways we create suffering, and focusing on the irony of so much of the way we live our lives, can be very, 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 very funny people. They just don't do it by exaggerating or lying. They simply say it like it is. And that can be pretty fucking funny. Some of my favorite comedians are that way. If you don't believe me, watch that clip of Patton Oswalt. He's pretty fucking funny. So, right livelihood is basically not dealing in slaves, poisons. Not that I thought you were dealing in slaves. So, arms, weapons. The Buddha even listed intoxicants. If you're a bartender, I'm not going to hold that against you. The goal of all of these principles is to have them as things we're aiming towards, not to beat ourselves up if we're falling short or if we still are find ourselves occasionally indulging in an exaggeration, or if we find that we still need to serve intoxicants to pay the rent. The idea is to simply open and to notice where there's stress and suffering in our lives, and to simply set our intentions towards eventually letting go of the practices that are causing us suffering. So the idea with right livelihood is just to notice if not only we are basically getting our happiness and our peace of mind at the expense of others, but is the place we're working for exploiting or harming others? Generally, deep down inside, most people know when they're working for a place that is causing harm to others. And even though we like to, when we pretend that we don't know that, what we're really doing is living in denial. We're erecting a wall in the mind where we're not looking at certain parts of our lives. We're saying, well, I'm in my relationship with my friends and with my family, I'm being very skillful. Yeah, at my job, I'm evicting poor people from the tenants that they live in, blah, blah, blah. That's just my work. Of course, the more walls we have to erect in our mind so that we don't see what we're doing in parts of our lives, the more stress and suffering we're creating for the mind. The mind cannot be comfortable and at peace if there are walls in it where certain parts of our endeavors we do not look at. If we find that some part in our lives we're acting unskillfully and we're not looking at that part has not gone away simply because we're not looking at it. It's there. It's just eating away at the corners of our awareness. So try to expand generosity and gratitude and goodwill into the way we relate to the rest of the world as much as we can. We practice. Obviously, doing this requires a sense of sustained endeavor. It requires sometimes stopping and thinking before we speak and asking, is this the right thing to say? Is it useful? And is it the right time? All of the Buddha's endeavors require a sense of watching what we're doing so that we don't fall into our old habits that of unskillful action. Now finally, the last three are the interior parts of the path, how right view and right thought flow inwards so that we can attain lasting inner peace and eventually take us towards enlightenment if you're on the enlightenment path. The seventh factor is right effort. And it's basically extending right thought so that we focus on what feelings and thoughts and emotions we have, and we take the time to struggle to and practice to develop thoughts and emotions and feelings that are comfortable and peaceful and skillful. Especially, it's sometimes in life when we're stressed out and we're worried and we're overly keyed up with what's going on, we feel our deadlines are impossible, we feel like there's too much being asked of us, bringing our awareness in and first noticing, well, what kinds of things am I thinking about right now? Am I thinking about everything I have to do in the future, or am I just thinking about the next right thing? Am I getting all keyed up on this, like this one event is going to be all of my happiness and everything depends upon it? It's continuing the work of right thought. Right mindfulness develops that further to sati, which is the word for mindfulness, is basically remembering to keep focus on the things that we have control over. What do we have control over? The breath, the body, our gut feelings, the thoughts that we think. There are four, those are the four areas that the Buddha said we can really, really work with to spread internal peace and tranquility. For example, if we're making the breath the focus of our mindfulness, it means throughout the rest of the day, as you go out into your days, throughout your life, as you interact with people, have a sense of simply how you're breathing. If you find yourself getting edgy or agitated or worked up, if you find yourself uncomfortable, bring your awareness to the breath and just notice if you're breathing fast, if you stop breathing altogether, if your breathing is labored, and simply work with developing a comfortable breath. By focusing the mind on the breath or relaxing the body, relaxing gut feelings, we're detaching our mind from the thoughts that can grab hold of us and cause stress, and we're refocusing it on things that can bring lasting happiness, like a very calm breath, as we saw in the meditation. I, throughout the course of my day, when I get worked up, when I find myself getting edgy, I bring myself into my body and I find my stomach and I notice that my stomach is really tight and uncomfortable, or if it's relaxed and soft. Just that one action is enough for me to diffuse so many situations where I would act unskillfully if I didn't do it otherwise. So that's mindfulness. It means not always walking around through our days with our focus entirely on what's going on externally. It's about rebalancing and noticing what's going on inside of us with our breath, with our bodies, with our gut sensations, just noticing where we're developing stress and relaxing and using our breath and our thoughts to relax what's going on inside of us. When we do that, we find that we can disengage from so much of the drama that we generally engage in, because the energy behind drama is always an energy based on, if only this thing worked out in the world, then I'd be happy. And that's an unskillful energy. Finally, and I know I've crammed in an awful lot, the Fourth Noble Truth is so much to teach in one sitting, but it's worth it because it's really something that we should make as portable as we can. The last factor is right concentration, sama samadhi. And basically what that means is that once we've spread skillful thoughts, we've relaxed the body and relaxed the breath, the thoughts are on peaceful thoughts, eventually the body will become more and more comfortable to be in. Eventually, we'll let go of our hyperfixation often when we're meditating on what's going on around us, and we'll just become at peace and at one with what's going on inside of us. Eventually, with practice, the breath can become so central or the relaxing body sensations can become so central that we just become one with the breath. We no longer feel this separation between the breath and the body and all that. There's this complete, what the Buddha called development of physical pleasure and mental rapture that comes from focusing on relaxing the body in meditation. Eventually, that can lead to a state of such letting go of all the thoughts that cause stress, of all the gut sensations that are underlying us, that we're carrying around with us, that tendency to have the shoulders tight and the stomach taut. Eventually, we become so relaxed that we can enter the states called the jhanas, which we talked about last week, where enlightenment, which is a state of complete ending of stress and suffering, can be attained. In summary, all of the Eightfold Path, all of the answer to stress comes from starting out with the simple observation that I am the author of my own stress and my own happiness. I create my own stress by focusing on things beyond my control, like how can I get people to do what I want? How can I get more from my career? How can I get more from this and that? At the expense, we overbalance towards those things and we underbalance towards working with relaxing the body, working with having thoughts that are peaceful so that we are no longer acting out on unskillful ideations. Nobody is saying that we should quit our jobs. The Buddha never taught that. He only allowed people to join his monastery as renunciates, but most of his practitioners were householders who had jobs. He's simply suggesting that we look to rebalance our lives so that we are looking for lasting peace and happiness in the places where we can find lasting peace and happiness, through thoughts that don't cause suffering and through developing internal peaceful states where we'll feel calm in our own skin. And when we feel calm in our own skin, we don't act unskillfully towards others. So that's the Eightfold Path, the Fourth Noble Truth. And now it's your turn to ask any questions about it. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Is it something about...